Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Jeff Byers. Happy New Year, Jeff.
Happy New Year indeed. Let's get 2024 rocking and rolling here.
Yes, indeed. Let's do it. Jeff, you know what? I haven't talked to you about today's show and what we're going to talk about. You're hearing it for the first time, just like our listeners. I want to have a special theme to the to today's show. Is that okay with you?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I am really glad you said yes, because if you said no, I got nothing, Jeff. It's going to be a
understood.
It would be a long hour, so I appreciate you answering in the affirmative. Jeff, today is going to be our special opt-out show, okay? After this past week, what we saw happen with Penn State in the bowl game, what we saw happen with Florida State, what we saw happen with Ohio State, opt-outs have I'm going to ask you, have they become a major problem?
Yes, but I think that it may be a problem that almost resolves itself because with the 12-team playoff format, I am wondering what the bowl system looks like moving down the road. And I am wondering if we end up either eliminating a lot of the bowls or changing the kind of thought process with those bowl games. There's been a couple of things floated out there that I think are interesting. I don't know that anything will come from any of it, but one is the idea that you expand the playoffs and we kind of run December as playoff time, and then you hit January 1st, that's your championship game, and then you open up the transfer portal immediately thereafter. You basically have a week to get your next destination if you are moving from one school to another and enroll in the spring classes. And I think you have the bowl games maybe kind of interspersed through there to whatever degree you have them. Presumably, you're not going to have people opting out of the playoffs, although who knows, in the world we're living in and the way people are viewing different things. The other part of it, Jim, is if we do end up with some semblance of the bowl system as it is, I am wondering how much, as we move forward, is going to be written into the letters of intent that, hey, for the NIL money that you're getting, you will play every game we're scheduled to play, bowl game included, in order to collect your NIL if you're healthy. And that's going to lead inevitably, there's going to be somebody that's going to test that, oh, I'm not feeling well. I'm sick on bowl game day. I need to opt out. I don't think that's going to be often, but somebody's going to test the limits of that at some point, and it'll be up to the courts, I guess, to ultimately decide on a case-by-case basis how those things are handled. But we're definitely in a different world. I will say, like, if I'm a Florida State fan and I went down to watch Florida State play Georgia and that's what I saw, not just because they lost, but I didn't see the team I watched all season or very many of those players, that is a disappointment. Even Penn State fans that went down, right, not being able to see Kalen King or Johnny Dixon or Olu Fashanu play in that Peach Bowl game, it takes away a little something. It's just like the you know, NBA or NFL teams that rest their starters. Well, the kids that went, the families and the kids of those families that paid money because they wanted to go see Lamar Jackson. And by the way, the Ravens definitely should sit Lamar for the entire game against the Steelers on Sunday. That's just good thinking. But yeah, you're disappointed if that's your one opportunity to come out and see your stars and they don't play because they're resting. It is a problem. It's a problem for the league and it's a problem for the fans and trying to keep that fan base engaged.
Well, of course, Jeff, like normal, you jumped ahead on my agenda here. Now, that's my fault for not sending you my agenda. We'll get to that 12-team playoff and what effect that will have. Let's start with what we saw, though, the last couple weeks, starting with Penn State. And what I'm finding in talking to fans is I think they were as upset about they were sold the bill of goods. They didn't get what they were, if not promised, at least it was insinuated that Olu was going to be maybe on a snap count, but we might see him play a bit. We got the impression that Kalen King was going to play. I even get the sense that James Franklin, it seemed almost like he thought Kalen King was going to play, and that might have been a last-minute decision. So does James Franklin have the responsibility to let the fans know ahead of time, look, you're coming down to Atlanta, you are not going to see Olu. You're not going to see Kalen. You're not going to see Johnny Dixon. Do the teams owe that to the fan base?
Yeah, it's a tricky thing, Jim, I think, because in this day and age, you know, the other factor here, and nobody wants to talk about it, but is the betting and the money that's involved here. And if I'm somebody close to the program, or even if I'm close to Kalen King, and King hasn't told, you know, I don't know how all of that went down, but if there's a lot of things that come in play here, and one of the things is with the money that's involved now, from an NIL standpoint, from a betting standpoint, right? If I have information going into that Ole Miss Penn State game before the odds makers have the information that, hey, yeah, these two guys are out. Man, I really think the matchup now favors Ole Miss because I know their receivers and I know that passing game. There's a lot more in play. Yes, I think there's some obligation there to the fans, and I think that's important as far as it goes. But I think it's you're getting into the dangerous territory here in terms of tampering with the money that's involved in gambling on college sports. And again, you can like it, not like it, whatever. It's here, and I don't think it's going anywhere anytime in our lifetime now. So I do think that, and I don't know if it's, hey, you need to the player, need to let the coaching staff know by the Monday of bowl week, and the coach then at, you know, Monday afternoon needs to let everybody involved, corporate sponsors and everybody else, hey, this is the lineup that we're going with. The tricky thing, obviously, again, is illness is still a reality. Somebody can get food poisoning legitimately the night before and sit out, or you could get hurt in practices leading up to it. I mean, all of the stuff that can occur throughout the week. But I think you get into some dangerous territory then too if it's, okay, this is ironclad who we have, and then again, Saturday morning, somebody wakes up and I'm just not feeling well. How do you know whether that's legitimate or not? And again, I don't think that's a circumstance that's going to happen very often, but I do think it's going to occur, and I think it's going to be a magnified story if and when it occurs. But yeah, generally speaking, I think at least a week ahead of time, hey, players, you got to let us know this is what we're doing, and the coach then has to accurately filter that information out to the media and the general public.
Now, understand here, I'm filling in the blanks a little bit. I don't know the true story of what happened with Kalen King, but kind of using it as a hypothetical, you know, is this a scenario where a player like Kalen King may have practiced the whole time, then said he's not going to play? Now, I would be very upset if he misled the team into thinking he was going to play by practicing. What also doesn't make sense to me is if you're Chop Robinson, he announced it right away. He was not at the practices. He moved on. As a fan, you may not like that, but I could understand that as a business decision on Chop Robinson's part. And maybe he's off, and as players will do, training for the combine. Very specific training. Improve his 40 speed. Maybe improving the reps that he can do. That can be gaining him millions of dollars. That makes sense. Practicing for 4 weeks and then saying you're not going to play makes no sense to me, Jeff.
No, I agree with you, and I also wonder about the, yes, from a coaching standpoint, if that is what occurred, then, yeah, you also are not getting the reps that you want for the guy that is actually going to play and start. And, yeah, you're, in essence, wasting time. And truthfully, the player, I agree with you, is wasting his own time if they know they're not going to play, or they strongly suspect that they're not going to play. And, you know, the other thing, and it's probably a small thing in the overall scheme of things, but I don't think, you know, flying the player down and having them involved. Now, Olufoshinu, and I don't know what Johnny Dixon and Kalen King's involvement was or wasn't and what the conversations were ahead of time, but like Olu clearly was kind of a coach down there. Like you can justify if, hey, we know going in, you're not going to be on the field or not going to be on the field much, but we think there's a benefit. You know, we want to reward you by taking you down. And part of it is the maturity of the player, you know, talking to Goon, those bowl trips can be very fun for some of the players. Even if they're playing early in the week, they may take advantage of some nightlife opportunities, shall we say. And so I think part of it, too, is the maturity of the players. And I think it has to be a serious conversation with the coaches. It's like, yeah, maybe taking Olu down makes sense, even if he's not going to play, because of the knowledge he has and the relationship he has with his teammates. And if he's not somebody that's going to be, hey, let's go to the club at 2 a.m. because I know I don't have to play. And you know he's going to take things seriously and responsibly and, you know, handle his business and help everybody else handle theirs. That's one thing. If it's somebody that's going down because it's a week vacation and they don't have any responsibility and they're not going to hold up any end of the bargain, then that to me is a very different scenario.
All right, Jeff, we'll pick up this conversation quarter two, because I'm going to question you about Olu. Stay tuned for that. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Jeff Byers. I'm Jim Galante. We are talking opt-outs today, Jeff, and very, very relevant topic, especially after the games that we saw the last couple of weeks. We're starting with Penn State and the Penn State opt-outs. We saw it, when we finished, you were talking about Olu actually doing some coaching up on the sidelines. That's one way to look at it. Here's another way to look at it. Would you, if you're one of Olu's teammates, maybe say, hey, Olu, if you want to help us, you got the pads on, come on out and help us. If not, stay back in Happy Valley and let us take care of this.
Yeah, I think part of it has to be the conversations ahead of time. And again, I don't know what all was or wasn't discussed. James Franklin at the one of the media days there said that he felt going in that they had very open conversations. Everybody kind of knew what to expect, and he didn't think there were any surprises internally in terms of who was heading to the draft or, you know, what the playing time was going to look like. I'm not sure that actually ended up being the case. But I think, again, to me, it comes back to you got to know your team and you got to know the players. If Olu says, hey, I'd like to go down, I don't want to play, I don't want to risk my draft status, then I think the coaches need to sit down and maybe even have a conversation with some of the players. Hey, we're thinking of taking Olu down. He's been a big part of this season, but he's not going to play. You know, let's have an honest conversation. I can argue it either way. Again, to me, it depends a large part to me on the approach. If Olu is down there going to all of the team activities and he's like, listen, I watching tape, I think this guy, you know, if you just make a little move this way or that way or lower your shoulder or whatever it is, and he's giving some little tips, and, you know, you feel confident he's not going to get in trouble while he's down there, that he's not going to be a guy that's just out carousing and creating potential issues that could be a distraction, then I think it makes sense. I also think it would make sense to have a blanket policy if that's what you chose to do, that, yeah, listen, if you're not playing, we're not taking you down. We want to work with the kids that are going to play and start developing for next season. I think either of those scenarios makes sense to me. I just think it needs to be clear ahead of time. Hey, this is the situation and this is how we handle it, or we're handling it this year. And again, I don't know that it needs to be necessarily the same policy every year. I think you can change things up depending on the individuals and the team situation that you have. But I get the feeling, I think the Olu situation, and again, I don't know any of this. I don't know what was happening internally. It feels like they had a pretty good handle on what was happening with Olu going in, that everybody was on the same page. I could be wrong about that, but that's what it felt like going in. The Johnny Dixon, Kalen King situation feels like that might not have been as clear, and that not everybody may have been on the same page going in. And I think that is a real problem. And especially, I mean, it's a problem, period. But when you look at the matchups here with Ole Miss, right, like the cornerback situation was clearly an issue for Penn State in this game. Now, I don't know. Maybe they did know that ahead of time. Maybe they had everybody prepared and Ole Miss just was better than what they thought. But from the outside looking in, it sure felt like there were some guys getting a lot more playing time than they were expecting, and that they were a little overmatched in this particular game.
I think you hit it right on, Jeff. We don't know for sure, but leading up to the game, you really got the impression from James Franklin, we've got this handled, we've got a plan, we've talked to everybody, we've communicated, we know exactly where we're at. After the game, it's, well, we may need to change our policies. And I wouldn't be surprised to see something like, look, if you're not playing, you're not traveling with us, you know, something to that effect. Now, James is smart enough. He's not going to come out and be directly critical of those players. He understands that's not good for the program.
Correct. And I do think that, yeah, I think it's something that needs to be handled internally, and I would agree with that. But again, I don't know that it's necessarily even a Penn State thing. Like, I just think the whether it's the conferences, the bowl games themselves, the schools, all across the board, like, somehow there needs to be some uniformity or consistency of at least knowing the information. Because, again, I don't think Penn State was the only team in the situation that appears Penn State was in. where kids are taking advantage of the, and that's my term, is taking advantage, but taking advantage of the opportunity to go to the bowl game, to be part of the experience, and then not be there for their teammates. And again, I think part of it can go back to just the way the contract, and that's what it is now with the national letter of intent. I mean, to some degree, it's always been that, but I mean, it's even more so. I think these schools, especially with the NIL involved, and you know, I know Brandon Short was saying the Bulls need to look at maybe sharing the money with the players, or the schools need to look at sharing the Bull revenue, however you want to parse that. But you know, part of it needs to be, listen, if you want to get your full money that is now available, like, you have to play every game that you're available, and that includes the bowl game. And again, moving forward, Jim, I'm wondering if this isn't a moot conversation, because I don't know how sustainable the bowl situation is as it currently exists. And certainly with the opt-outs, I mean, I get the bowl destinations are by and large neat places and good draws for fans, but I don't know how many fans, even the diehards, are going to be excited moving forward, seeing the way these games are playing out and the number of players that are opting out. These games aren't representative of what the teams that you watch during the season have been or are. And I think that's, I don't think long-term that is sustainable as a product that the people will want to pay and go watch.
I want to talk to you about that, and there's a little bit of the debate of the carrot or the stick for these bowl games. But before we get there, just to put a bow on, you know, Penn State's performance, how much effect did the opt-outs have, and how much can you take out of this game because of all the opt-outs?
Well, so I do think the opt-outs affected the game. I don't think there's any question Ole Miss saw a clear advantage on the outside with its receivers. Now, Prescott also had a huge day at tight end. You know, so I think it was the opt-outs combined with Abdul Carter, you know, and his leg injury in the second quarter. You know, basically, you took out, I don't know exactly how you, four of the top six, maybe the top four defenders for Penn State out of the game for the second half. Clearly, that's going to impact the way your defense plays, especially when you combine that with the loss of a defensive coordinator. And I think Penn State was playing as good of an offense as it faced all season, maybe better. I think Michigan and Mississippi would be comparable anyway, but certainly one of the top two offenses that Penn State saw all season. And so, yeah, having four of your top defenders out along with your defensive coordinator, that's going to impact the way things play out there. I think, to me, though, looking forward and in terms of what you take out of the game for Penn State, I think there's obviously very real concerns right now about the passing game and what it can be. And you know, I have high hopes for Andy Kotelnicki. I'm excited to see what he can do. But, you know, Drew Aller has not looked good on the big stage. And I'm not pinning it all on Drew Aller, but, I mean, he is not stepping up in those big moments the way you would hope a big-time prospect would. And I think it's a legitimate concern. And I think it's a legitimate question, Jim. You know, all season long, I was saying, well, clearly, Drew Aller's your starter. I'm not saying that. I am saying now, I don't think Drew Aller clearly is your starter. And even looking back on this season, I'm wondering if, given what Penn State had personnel-wise, if Bo Perola wouldn't have been the better option, because Penn State never was able to get that passing game consistent to compete with the Michigans and the Ohio States and the Ole Misses of the world. And I do think a Bo Perola, with what he can do with your legs and with the running game you have, helps open some things up for the running backs. And I think it's a legitimate question. And I think the quarterback room needs to truly be opened up for a legitimate competition in the spring and in the preseason. And I'm not saying you throw Drew Aller out and that's the end of him and I don't ever want to see him again. I'm saying I want to see a real competition. And I'm not sure that maybe having both quarterbacks be a big part of the equation isn't part of the answer. And you see how a game is going. And listen, Kotelniki did that in Kansas. They had a couple of quarterbacks that they used. And when you have as different a skill sets as Aller and Prabula, you know, I think maybe it is a situation where you take it on a game-by-game basis. But I also think you need to see significant improvement here from Aller, certainly from the receivers too. There's questions with the offensive line with the, you know, losing three starters. You know, I think you're solid at running back and at tight end, but I think there's some real concerns coming out of that game in terms of what Penn State can do next season when it comes to the quarterback, the receiving core, and again, not so much out of this game, but I just think the offensive line with what it's going to need to replace next season, I think it's at least a concern going into the 2024 campaign.
Yes, it's funny. It was the defense that had so many players sit out, but it's the offense that it was just so much more the same. Those criticisms we had mid-season, we're seeing that all again. And yeah, in hindsight, especially in those three losses, the performance from Drew Aller, yeah, I would be curious to see how those games would have shaped up if it were Bo Prabula as the quarterback. Don't know if it would have been better. It would have been different. All right, Jeff, we are not done with the opt-outs. We're going to hit it more come quarter three. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's Jeff. I'm Jim. We're talking about opt-outs. We saw how much effect it had on those bowl games this year, not just Penn State. You saw it with Ohio State. Can you imagine Ohio State in a bowl game scoring a total of 3 points? I actually think some Ohio State fans would like to have Kyle McCord back, Jeff. We saw Florida State, undefeated conference champion, lose by 60 points. But again, half the team didn't show up. Literally didn't show up because they opted out. So you've been trying to take this conversation forward, Jeff. I'm finally going to let you. Let's talk about next year and what happens, which is the 12-team playoff. Forgetting the argument that I've had, this year would have been a great year for the 12-team playoff. And all those games that I mentioned with Penn State, with Ohio State, with Florida State would not have happened, because all those teams would have been part of the 12-team playoff. So the question is the 12-team playoff the fix for the opt-out, or is it going to create a bigger problem?
I think it's going to create a bigger problem for the non-playoff teams and their bowl games. And I think it's going to create a problem in terms of drawing interest. When you look at the bowl schedule this year, Jim, there were very few games that you would say, man, that was a fun game. That was a good game to watch. Both teams just came and gave it their all and played hard and the whole bit. I mean, there's a handful at most that I think you could say that about. And I think a big part of it was not just the opt-outs, but slash transfer portal. And I mean, I guess they're opting out for a different reason, but one of the things that I think they have to figure out how to get in front of is the transfer portal, where a Kyle McCord has to make a decision, before the bowl game as to whether or not he wants to stick around. And if he doesn't, then he's out of there. I don't think that's good. I don't think it's good for the kids. I don't think it's good for the programs. And I know it's not good for the fans. So, you know, maybe you move the bowl schedule up a bit. I don't know from a logistical standpoint the issues that that may or may not cause for the bowl games and the bowl committees and all of that, because there is planning that goes into that. And obviously you're not going to know the 12 teams for the playoffs until that regular season is over, kind of Thanksgiving weekend. But maybe you limit the number of bowl game opportunities moving forward, because I do think with the bowl games, right, they've already, just with the four-team playoff, they've been decreased in significance. I mean, we talked going in, Penn State, Ole Miss, I did think was an intriguing game, and it was one of the few, though, that I'm like, yeah, this is going to be worth watching even with the playoffs. Georgia, Florida State could have been that type of game. Ohio State, Missouri could have been that type of game. But there's not a lot of them that the casual fan now, obviously the teams of the respective, or the fans of the respective teams, yeah, they want to see it. And listen, knucklehead college football diehards like me, I'll have those idiotic games on in the background because I'm addicted. But most common sense folks, it's like, well, no, I don't need to see this garbage, especially with the players that I'm not familiar with and that haven't played all season long representing their schools. I really wonder how different that picture is going to look like, the bowl picture. And, you know, even moving it ahead a little bit, Jim, I'm just wondering, like, what we want, I think, as fans are meaningful games, right? And that was what college football tried to sell, is every game means something, except if you lost a couple early on, then it didn't really. I mean, it mattered, obviously, to the fans, and you want to finish as strongly as you can. But I think if you even expand the playoffs to 16 or even beyond that, shorten the regular season schedule, like, you want to see the games that we had in those national semifinals. Like, those were fun, big-time games, came right down to the end. Like, that's what you want as a fan. If you're not a fan of either team, you want to see close competitive games between teams that are interesting to you. And it's not just in the postseason that we don't get that with the bowl games. We don't get it much during the regular season, right? I mean, Penn State, we talked about it all year, Jim. Like, yeah, they needed to take care of business in 10 games, but this season was all about two games. There were two games that the fans wanted to see and really were pumped for. The other games were kind of there. I mean, Iowa, obviously, with the whiteout, was a big game in the moment. But, I mean, you knew this season was coming down to two games. With the expansion, with Texas and Oklahoma going into the SEC, with Oregon and Washington and USC and UCLA going into the Big Ten, like, you're at least going to have more games that I think are compelling and will actually draw interest during the regular season. I think the question is, you know, how do you maximize those opportunities for the fans moving forward and keep that interest high for fans and ultimately sponsors and advertisers?
Here's the thing, Jeff, and you're using a lot of logic here. The logic is, with the 12-team playoffs, the hope is any player part of those playoffs will show up for those. I think overall that will be the case. There might be an exception here or there, but I think that will typically be the case. Then will the rest of the bowl games just die a natural death from lack of interest? Well, here's the problem with that. There's already, even prior to the 12-team playoffs, even prior to the 4-team playoffs, there are bowl games. If you pick any two Power 5 teams randomly, let's get Wake Forest from the ACC and, I don't know, Texas Tech from the Big 12 playing in a bowl game. How many players from Wake Forest could you name? How many players from Texas Tech can you name, Jeff? I can't name any. But you know what? On a random, you know, Thursday night in the middle of December, I'll probably turn the game on. And there are enough of those people. In fact, that's why those games are still played. If you look at the crowd at the game, those stadiums are half empty. That's not the point. The point is the TV ratings, and I think ESPN owns most of these bowl games now. It gives them programming that still, overall, it's live sports, and it's probably better than a random NBA or NHL game during a weeknight.
But with the opt-outs, I don't know if that necessarily continues, Jim. Like even I, and I consider myself a diehard, I'm like, some of these games, if it's not competitive and there's not the players that, hey, this quarterback at this MAC school, you might see him in the NFL. If that component isn't there, I wonder, and maybe we are so football addicted that, yep, that they're still going to tune in. That could be the case. But Oregon Liberty held my attention for the first quarter, Jim, and then I was out. Florida State, Georgia held my attention for the first quarter. I'm like, okay, I see how this game is going. Like, it's not fun. It's not entertaining. And again, I don't know what the answer is with the opt-outs. I do think there are answers there. And I do think some semblance of the bowl format that we have can continue, but I think it's got to be adjusted.
Well, let me ask you this question. You mentioned two specific games, Oregon Liberty, which was competitive for a quarter. In fact, I believe Liberty was ahead after the first quarter, and Georgia Florida State, which ended up being a 60-point margin. If those games had stayed close, Jeff, would you have continued watching?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely would have. And again, there were games that few and far between, but there were games like that where you had a team hanging in there despite not ideal circumstances when it comes to the opt-outs. But I think they're few and far between.
Well, I guess my point being is it's not so much that are they do they have opt-outs? It's is the game competitive? So if Wake Forest, Texas Tech is on in that random game and it's competitive, will you keep watching? And the other part to that equation is, Jeff, Penn State had five defenders sitting out or playing limited snaps. Chop Robinson, Adisa Isaac, Curtis Jacobs, Johnny Dixon, and Kalen King. Why? They're NFL players. They had NFL careers at stake. How many Wake Forest defensive players have an NFL career at stake?
No, that's a fair point. And some of those games, you're right, end up being more intriguing because you're not getting a ton of opt-outs from the MAC schools or some of the non-Power 5 conferences. I don't know. I don't know what this looks like with the expanded playoffs in terms of the interest in the non-playoff games moving forward. Maybe it remains what it has been. It feels to me like it's going to continue to take eyeballs away from the TV sets for those games. And I think part of it is going to be, how the scheduling occurs. And listen, if they're able to schedule all of those games in that kind of 2-week period that they're in right now, the week before and after Christmas, maybe it does work. I think it's going to be a challenge moving forward with the playoffs to keep the interest in the current bowl format to the degree that it is and with the number of bowl games that there are. But to your point, I mean, there's a reason a lot of us keep complaining about, man, there's too many bowl games, but I tune in and watch them, and they're not putting them on because they're losing money with those bowl games. They're putting them on because all of those games are profitable to one degree or another because of the TV advertising that's there.
In non-streaming TV, Jeff, the one thing that they still offer is live sports that moves the needle. We will watch live sports. We will especially watch live football. And that's why I don't think that will go away, because we like football. We'll still watch it, and that's been happening anyway. All right, Jeff, quarter number four, we're going to give out some theories on how to fix these opt-out issues. Stay tuned for that. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Jeff. I'm Jim. It's quarter number four. Jeff, we've been talking about the opt-out situation in college football. All right. Do you want to hear the positive spin about the opt-outs going into next year?
Absolutely. Hit me.
All right. Listen to this theory. I think the lesser bowl games with the lesser teams won't be as affected as much by opt-outs because they don't have the NFL players on their teams. Sure, it happens and it will happen, but it's a lot more limited. What you have, and if you look at the games, at least the ones that I'm throwing out there that were really affected by opt-outs, it was the Ohio State game, Florida State game, Penn State game. What do they all have in common? Next year, those teams would be playing in the playoffs. So I think it's those really good teams with a lot of talent who just missed the playoffs that are most affected by the opt-out. And next year with the 12-team playoff, those teams are going to be in the playoffs. So I don't think there'll be as many opt-outs. But I think it still can happen, Jeff. So let's talk about how to avoid it happening more often. And we talked about this a little bit earlier in the show. What are you in favor of, the carrot or the stick?
Probably more the carrot. I think they've just got to figure out. Truthfully, I'm okay either way. I just think they need to get it figured out so that you have a more appealing product for the fans, for the advertisers, and really, I think just for the game. Like I think you want the games to be a reflection of the seasons. And I just don't think that's what you're seeing right now in too many of these cases. But I'm okay with the idea of, hey, let's share the revenue from the bowls. And I don't, you know, whether that's a direct payout from the bowls to the players or the, you know, bowls just give it to the schools and the schools then have to figure out how to divvy that up. However that plays out, I think that is some form of that is probably coming. I still think they have to figure out this whole both the transfer portal thing and the NIL thing and get it to some sort of even footing and manageable grouping. I think they will get that figured out. And I think it'll be the conferences ultimately that kind of determine that, Jim. I don't think the NCAA as a ruling governing body is effective anymore, but I think the conferences, and in particular the five power conferences, they know what's at stake and they know the money that's involved here. And I think they also know the importance of getting the players their just desserts, if you will, to make this a workable situation moving forward. So I do think they'll get there. It's probably not going to be as quickly. I don't know that everything that you want to see in place will be there next year, but I think they'll move in a pretty good direction pretty quickly here, starting with this offseason.
I understand when you say the conferences should be stepping in, but unless they all do, it's not going to work.
Well, yes and no. So you may have some variance within from conference to conference, and I think some variance is going to be okay. Where, and part of it, Jim, is I think the conference commissioners are going to have to get together, and it's one of those situations. It's almost like the NFL. Yes, each team is competitive within itself, but you have a league commissioner, and maybe the five conferences get together. This is not my idea. It's been proposed a couple of different places I've read where it's like, hey, you need a college football commissioner or college football commissioner's office anyway, whether it's an individual or a group, and in particular, the five power conferences can get together and, hey, for the betterment of our sport, this is what we need to do. And, it may be some compromise that's involved again. But in order to at least level the playing field to a degree, and listen, there's always going to be inherent advantages with some conferences and with some schools, right? I keep seeing people that very worried about the NIL, the Texases and the Alabamas and the Ohio States, who can compete with that? Well, I mean, it's been like that, not with NIL, but in college football, there's inherent advantages to Alabama and USC and the powerhouses. There's a reason that those schools have been powerhouses pretty consistently. Yeah, there's some ebb and flow, obviously, but the Alabamas, the Oklahomas, the USCs of the world, there's a reason that decade after decade, you see a lot of the same names there. It's because they have inherent advantages. Whether it's just the culture of the schools, the money that the alumni put into it, the facilities, the whole bit, that all, it's always been unfair. Northwestern and Alabama don't have the same resources and the same advantages, and they never will. What you want to, I think, try to avoid, though, is how wide that gulf becomes, especially with the upper tier schools. Like, you don't want, four or five schools that are offering millions and millions of dollars and nobody else is offering more than $10,000, where there's such a disparity that it becomes truly just non-competitive across the board. And I think the conferences see the self-interest that's involved here. I also think, Jim, that this whole landscape is going to look very different in 10 years. I think we're going to get back sooner rather than later to more of a regional construct with college football and college basketball as well, because I think we're going to get to the point where we have just the two or three super conferences, and I think they'll go back to, all right, we have a Northeast and a West and a Southeast, and then you'll get together with the playoffs, and that's where you'll get the intriguing, what we think of as interconference matchups now. You'll see those on a regular basis in the playoffs. I think fairly quickly we'll head to an expanded playoff, a shortened regular season schedule, and more regional scheduling.
Well, Jeff, what I think is interesting is that argument about the disparity because of NIL and then the portal combined with NIL could create things that you might not the disparity, the lack of competitiveness. I could argue it could make things more competitive. If you're, say, a Maryland with all that Under Armour money, maybe that could help Maryland get there. You mentioned earlier about it's not good for the game or the players or the program, guys leaving, transferring before their bowl game. Well, you know what? Kyle McCord in Syracuse might argue differently. And because of this, I don't know how much NIL money was involved, but is this Syracuse's opportunity to say, hey, wait a minute, we've got a five-star quarterback now, which the last decade or two wasn't possible for our program.
But how much would that be different if Syracuse had to wait three more weeks till McCord comes aboard? I wouldn't say McCord's announcing that he's transferring to Syracuse exactly helped them in their bowl game this year. That was a pretty lopsided contest in and of itself. The other thing, I think they need to get that figured out more so so that you have the players who have been with their team throughout the season finishing it up. I don't think the transfer portal in and of itself, I don't think is a devastating thing, but I think having so many players go into it before finishing up their current season, I do think that is a significant issue, and I do think it's something that they've got to address and get a better handle on to allow for that transfer to occur. Again, just January 1st or whatever the date is you want to set. If you want to set it December 25th, presumably you're not going to have a lot of players in the championship game feeling that they have to announce that they're going to be out of there in the week before that championship game. But I just think that's – I think it's important just for the kind of the fabric, I guess, of the game and the way fans feel about it. But I also – I mean, I have to think Kyle McCord wanted to be part of that Ohio State team, even if he's knows that he's going to be leaving. I got to believe he wanted to finish that thing up and try to end on a high note in the bowl game as well.
I do like your idea, Jeff, of adjusting that transfer portal schedule. They have it's unfortunate that Kyle McCord will leave earlier. The sooner the better for him to know that he could enroll in the spring semester at Syracuse. And that's the one downside I see, that if you narrow that window, if you have to wait till January 1st or even December 25th and not know where you're going to be in your next semester of school, I think that's the one downside to it.
Yeah, or and even, Jim, I'm okay. Like, I think if you are part of the Ohio State team this year or the Penn State team this year, and you know you're wanting to go somewhere else next year, like, I think it's okay to have that conversation. It's going to create some interesting scenarios if, hey, we know the quarterback that's leading us in this bowl game is heading to Syracuse next year, but I still think I would rather that. Let the kid play out the season, even if it's, we've made the announcement, we've made the agreement. Allow that to happen, and again, let the this year's team finish up with this year's team.
I like that idea, Jeff, and I think that does happen. There have been, I've watched some of the bowl games where they say, hey, this guy's going to be gone next year. He's already entered the portal, but chose to play for our team this year in the bowl game. I like that. I like that idea, Jeff. Hopefully we'll see more of that. Unfortunately, we are out of time. Thank you all for joining us. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.